it's time. It is that time. Time for Stiles and Watkins.
You can join the show by texting 916-339-1140. Find us on YouTube at Sactown Sports 1140.
It's time for Alan Stiles and Chris Watkins.
Yes, yes, yes. On a Thursday, a huge Thursday at that, as the Kings try to stay out of the play-in and give themselves a chance to stay out of the play-in with a win tonight against the Pelicans, who they have not beat this season, who they have not gotten close to beating this season. We break it all down for the next 4 hours. How can the Kings get it done? Keys to the game, injury updates. We have it all for you. Too much going on in the sports world right now. You have the Masters going on. Shohei gets absolved as Ipe is now pleading guilty and moving forward there. So I guess that's over, Chris. There's no more to talk about. Iowa, you got Caitlin Clark doing her best T-Swizzle Swifty Taylor Swift impression. $82 million generated in Iowa because of the women's basketball team. And we break everything down. Another relocation happening in sports, and this has nothing to do with the A's, but we do have a lot to talk about as far as the A's, as Tim Kaun has posted a story on ESPN. We will get into the details there and whether or not Vivek is playing chess, not checkers. Mm. Did Chris want to bring up, and you know, we're very honest on this show, and if you were listening to the crosstalk with Dave and Jason Ross, Chris and I were very young when the OJ situation happened. Obviously, this is just the word polarizing and OJ, that doesn't even seem like a good enough word. But OJ Simpson and everything that happened there, whenever anybody dies, it's not good. So, you know, prayers go out to the family. But, I mean, it's just not something that I don't think we are really the best people to break down and to give stories. We were literally five. I was five, and I don't think
unborn.
You were born yet.
I was
so,
completely unborn.
So that's just kind of what it is. And I know everybody has their memories of that time, and that's kind of where I want to leave it.
Yeah, no, I mean, we really don't have much insight to give, don't really have much, you know, personal experience or stories. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, honestly, I think OJ's biggest contribution to my generation is giving the Kardashians a lane
seriously.
To thrive. So, I don't really have much to say on that situation. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, anytime anyone passes, it's you think about the families. And, you know, I'm sure that family has definitely dealt with a lot in their time. And, you know, I'm sure this doesn't, you know, doesn't help at all, but definitely, you know, thinking about that family and just that everybody who's affected by that whole situation, for sure.
Want to hang on, 1:30. I have a story. It's a grind your gears type. Well, first, we have two stories.
Yeah.
We have a grind your gears story. The other story I have not previewed to Chris Watkins.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
The first story Chris knows about because I was texting him. But Simone doesn't know about the second story. Neither of them know about. That's at 1:30.
That's always scary.
We'll have some fun with it. We'll be all right. We'll be all right as we take you up to 2 p.m. We also have the top 30 players and where Sabonis and Fox falls and what that says about the roster construction for the Kings. As I was listening to Sam Amick, Chris, I was going to physical therapy. So, of course, I fire up Sactown Sports and Sam Amick was talking. He did shout out the show, by the way.
I heard.
He talked about listening to us and how the Kings might just not have enough. And I hate that it can be that simple sometimes. And as we go into this game, and we've had multiple people on this show. We've had two of the most in-depth Kings media members in Brendan Nunes and Frankie Cardicelli on this show. And nobody really hasn't. We've talked to Whitey Gleason, one of the best sports minds there is, not just in Sacramento, in Northern California. There is nobody that truly, truly has an answer to whether or not the Kings can come up with a counterpunch to when the threes stop falling. I think most people have just accepted that that's who they are. And we're going to get texts today, and we're going to get calls today, and shout out to the Sac Chat. We're going to get Sac Chat today about not shooting that many threes, but nobody knows what else they could do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a frustrating situation for sure. Anytime you see your team just chucking it up and living and dying by the three, it's not the most aesthetic basketball out there. But We talked about it a bit yesterday. I do think it's a bit of a necessary evil with all the guys out there. And, you know, I just don't know, you know, to add another one to the list of people who don't really have an answer. I don't really know where else this team can go just because, let's also not forget Malik Monk got hurt with 10 games left. Like Mike Brown said it at the time, and it's definitely become true. You can't just wholesale change everything with 10 games left. And so they kind of got put into a bad situation. We talked a lot yesterday about how important Malik is in that pick and roll game with Sabonis. And, you know, without that pick and roll game there, they really don't play much of it. I mean, pick and roll is kind of built into their flow offense a bit with Sabonis setting so many screens and Alex Len setting screens as well. But they don't do the just cut and dry pick and roll like they do with Sabonis and Monk. And so I do think a caller, not a texter, that mentioned yesterday, you know, that's a lot of Sabonis points that are just kind of left out there. Sabonis gets a lot of buckets in that pick and roll situation when defenders have to make that decision of, do I go double on Malik and add some pressure on him driving, or do I, you know, sag off and kind of also guard Sabonis but allow Malik to take that floater? That threat's not really there with Davion. It's not there with Keon. I think Colby Jones can maybe do it, but again, that's where this injury happening with 10 games left in the season kind of hurts them, because you can't just throw Colby out there and say, hey, you know, for 10 minutes a game when we just run Malik Domas pick and rolls, that's now on you, Rook. Like, that's just way too much for him to handle right
now.
Does
that also combine with, and I know Kevin Huerter, the one very good example I saw from that mind game pod.
That's right.
When LeBron, I really don't want to. When LeBron talked about the split action.
Yes.
Is that also a situation where if I were to say to you, hey, what about the split action wrinkle? Is that another thing that you would say, hey, without Kevin Huerter and Malik Monk, is that not something that could be taught maybe?
They could. I mean, that's also one of those things that's just kind of built into the motion offense is split cuts. And it's kind of a basketball IQ thing of when to do it and when to execute it. I think that has more to do with, like we were talking about yesterday, just teams packing the paint and in general, the cutters not being there because teams are essentially, I mean, think of it like they're playing a 3-2 zone essentially, and you're just not going to be able to squeeze it. Like there's very, very small passing lanes to fit those things into. And, you know, I think a bit of this is, I think a bit of this is the Kings, they shoot threes because that's what the teams, they're packing the paint. So the Kings are like, okay, we're going to take the look that you're giving us. And I think the problem is there's a disconnect between the Kings think that they're a shooting team versus the teams they're playing are daring them to be a shooting team. And I think we've seen that, you know, in that OKC game, they were like, all right, yeah, Keon Ellis, he's going to hit 12 threes tonight. That's going to happen. Davion, I know he started hot. He's going to hit 5 threes. HB, 0-4, like, you know, even Keegan, 3 yeah. of 10. Like, they're just willing to live with, hey, that's in, you know, when we talk about the Warriors and why, you know, Mike Brown is from the Warriors system but doesn't quite run exactly what the Warriors do, more in sense of the back cuts. It's because the Warriors, you can't let them be a three-point. You're never going to say, okay, prove to me, Golden State, that you're a shooting team. The Kings are in a period right now where teams are saying, all right, we know you were a good shooting team last year, but this year, looking at the numbers, 80 games in, you're 16th in the NBA in percentage. So if you want to take 58 threes, go ahead.
It's a crazy thought, and we're way, way, way too far gone to have a philosophy conversation. Yeah. This is more so for next season, but it does feel like there's a conversation to be had on the offensive philosophy and what you think the team is versus what it actually is. Because, going into the season, we did the laser beam fate of the world for a three-pointer, even if that guy was healthy, I mean, I think it was supposed to be Kevin Huerter, right? Probably. And Kevin or Keegan.
Yeah.
So you go into the season with Kevin Huerter, Keegan Murray, De'Aaron shooting at a higher clip than he is now, and you also have HB who
Should be. I mean, he was 39% until he wasn't.
Exactly. And Malik Monk as well. And you think, oh, you shouldn't be able to afford to stack the paint and to kind of fill up the paint the way teams are. But the game is not played on paper, and a couple months went by. Yep. Kevin Huerter couldn't figure it out. Keegan Murray had a down year, even though he did improve in other areas. Malik Monk was a bit hot and cold. Yep. He'd have some really good streaks. De'Aaron cools off. And now you're looking at a team, and I believe Sam said this on the morning show, there's just no identity.
Yeah.
We have to shoot threes because that's what we did last season, but we're just going to go until we can't. And we're not, especially when you're missing guys like they're missing, there really isn't a counterpunch. So we go, I would just say going into this game, even though I've been on record saying they will not lose to a team five times in a row,
hard time believing it.
I definitely am going into this game kind of calloused, if you will.
Yes, yeah,
from,
for sure.
From the Knicks game to a different game, but the Celtics game as well, and even before then in the Thunder game. I'm prepared for the worst.
Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of what Whitey said like yesterday, that, right? That's, like during the crosstalk.
I'm prepared for the – I'm hoping for the best. I'm preparing for the worst because I'm telling you, man, I mean, it was even – you know, my wife was looking at me after that Thunder game. She's like, are you okay?
What have you gotten us into?
Yes, for real. It's hot. You know, got the AC on. Yeah. Are you okay? When we return, pocket watching, doing it early because it's such a big night in the association. Also, what happens if the Kings lose? Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Speaking of Drizzy Drake, rumored to be dropping a Kendrick diss tonight at midnight. So technically Friday,
I did not hear that.
Joe Budden on the Joe Budden podcast, his sources say that he said it's coming. And he said that they both have disses coming, Kendrick.
Really?
And, well, Kendrick, I guess, would be answering to J. Cole, but Drake is going to tap in tonight. That's the rumor. All I need is a beam going. Drizzy's diss track. That is all.
Do we think that they insult the apology?
You got to.
You have to. Like, even Drake should say like, exactly.
Might delete later.
Honestly, Drake should call it no apologies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This is going to get crazy. And then they're going to all apologize and go to Turks and Caicos.
Exactly. They're going to do a tour together, actually. It's going to be the Big Three Tour, I'm calling it. Coming summer 25.
That's smart. That is smart. 916-339-1140. All guests and callers join us from the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Let's go to Sharesta, who wants to be a part of the conversation. What you got for us?
Hey, good morning, guys. The offensive philosophy that you were talking about, you know, it drives me nuts with the three-point chucking. And I was just thinking, when the Kings kind of get a big lead, let's say they got like a 19-point lead in the last game, they were up big on the Knicks. Do you think the coaching staff should change the philosophy to say, now that we got a big lead, can we just take it inside? Just go for those two-point buckets. Let's not go for the low percentage three-point shots. Let's just maintain this lead. It just drives me nuts that the coaching staff just says, if you see an open shot, just go for it when you can really try to take it inside. I don't know what you guys think, but I feel like when you have a big lead, let's just try to maintain that lead and not try to keep increasing the lead, which these guys think they can do.
Yeah.
No, thanks for the call. And that's a good point because specifically with the Thunder didn't get back by shooting threes themselves.
Right.
It's not as if they got hot.
No.
So the Kings felt like they had to continue to shoot threes. That wasn't the case. The Thunder, they were just banging down low and doing things like that. The first thing I'll say is that I think things changed when Chet Holmgren had some muscle milk before the game and decided I wasn't going to get punked like I got punked the first couple of times that I went up against Big Bro from Gonzaga in Sabonis. So I think that is the first thing that happened because when you talk about the two-pointers, Chris, and you mentioned it before, as annoying as it is, we know when we've had people on the text line say, hey, it's 30, it's a better percentage to take mid-ranges, right, 30% and better than taking the threes. And we get all that. But that still isn't perfect. So – you don't have slashers besides De'Aaron. And we, all week, we've been critical of De'Aaron for falling in love. I mean, he took 17 three-pointers. So De'Aaron's really the only guy I can sit there. It's just a matter of, it's just where the team is right now, because it's De'Aaron and then to a lesser degree, Keegan, who can get you two-point buckets, and Sabonis. Those are the three that I'm looking to get two-point buckets. Davion, I mean, he'll take them sometimes. Keon will take them sometimes. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, for me, if it's some of those role guys, I've never even seen Trey Lyles take a mid-range jump shot, and he doesn't really get to the cup. Yep. So to me, when you're looking at these role players, as in Keon and Davion and Trey Lyles, if they're not able to get to the cup, which Davion tried, he got that thing tossed back to yesterday. Yeah. If it's not those guys, I'm not really upset with them taking an open three instead of a two, because I don't really know how long the shooting is going to stay hot anyway. But as far as De'Aaron and Keegan, yes, they could definitely utilize some two-point opportunities more. That's where I'm at with
I would just say, in general, I mean, if there's an open look, they're never going to be advised to turn it down. I mean, Mike Brown's made that very,
40
very clear.
A game,
yeah, it's
correct?
Insane. That's the minimum. I mean, I personally would agree with the caller. I would say that, you know, I would like to see this team take more twos, especially when they're up big. But I think that there's a way of doing it. Like, again, I think that if there's an open three, they're always going to take it. It doesn't matter if they're up 30 or down 30, they're going to take the open look. But I do think that there's something to, and it ties in with having a major lead, is eating the clock. I don't have a problem with them taking threes as long as they're trying to get a two throughout the shot clock. Like, it's okay if it eventually settles with a three with 10 seconds or less on the shot clock, but we're just not even seeing the effort of trying to get to the rim. And if it is quote unquote effort, it feels like a dummy call of, hey, we're just trying to touch the paint because we know that's what Mike Brown wants us to do.
The other team
knows
that.
They know it too, because they don't even try and bite on the drive. They're just automatically ready to get out on the spray. And so, I just think that they need to more legitimately try and attack the rim. And I think it's a plus-plus where, yes, you're trying to get a better look, a more efficient look at the rim, but also you're eating clock. Instead of, you know, pace and you know, style of play is really important for this Kings team offensively, and they want to play fast, they want to get shots up, but at the same time, if you're up 19, the clock is your friend. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're just trying to make sure, you're trying to limit possessions, and you want to get as many good looks as possible. And to me, the way of doing that is by legitimately running your offense, trying to get to the rim. And yeah, if it's not there, then we can take these desperation threes. But ultimately, I just think it's too much settling, and early settling, most importantly, for a lot of these three-point attempts that are just chucked up.
Two situations happened against the Thunder that I think have been singed into Kings fans' minds. The possession with about four offensive rebounds where it was just Chuck City, and they continued to shoot threes and nobody hit one.
They were all open, though. I don't have a problem with that possession. I think Mike Brown's going to put on a frame.
Yeah, 14 seconds.
Put it on his fridge.
Sure, I get all that. But I think that it didn't look great.
It looks bad when you miss it.
Sure. As far as it fitting the philosophy, sure. As far as fans watching it, terrible.
Yeah.
It just looked bad. And then I would say De'Aaron settling on multiple possessions early in the shot clock with the three ball. When the three ball leaves, as a guy who's not really a shooter, and I know De'Aaron is, I'm not comparing myself to De'Aaron, but as a guy who the shooting is more of the counterpunch, when that thing leaves, you got to believe that it left. You know what I mean? If you're hot, you ride it when it's hot.
Yeah.
Once it's gone, don't try to bring it back.
It's like poker or blackjack.
It's gone. Like, You lose one hand, lose one spin. Get out of Dodge. Just get out and go grab some food. And De'Aaron tried to go back to the well. You know what's interesting, Chris, before we come back quickly here, you know what's interesting is that I assumed that the Thunder took more free throws as far as more players getting a free throw opportunity than the Kings. The Kings, actually, five different guys took free throws.
Yeah.
The Thunder, only four guys attempted a free throw. So in my mind, they do have that ability to get to the line. My question is, and we did it with De'Aaron specifically, but in a larger scope, is there an idea of, I'm not really trying to be in the paint because the Kings are the worst free throw shooting team in the league.
There's also that.
So maybe they're not super excited to be at the free throw line, especially now when I'd rather just take a three in motion. Yeah. And if I miss it, it's a three. It's a lonely, it's a lonely place.
That's when you start playing the points per possession game. And like you're saying, I mean, if you're going to go one of two at the free throw line every time, that's 1 point per possession. Mm-hmm. That's not ideal. You ideally want to be hovering, I think, around 1.3 is ideal where you want to be falling. And, that's why I say, you know, threes are worth more than two. That's why you take a three instead of a long two, is just the points per possession and the amount of times that those things go up, at the efficiency they go up. It just, the math, and Monty McNair, more than anybody, he's coming from Daryl Morey's Houston system, where look at James Harden's shot chart when he was playing in Houston. It is literally, and not just James Harden, it's the entire team. Mm-hmm. It's how they're built with modern basketball. It is all, every single point in the paint or from three. Mid-range does not exist in these Morey systems.
Coming up next, pocket watching and what happens if the Kings don't get it done tonight. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. As we ask the question, get into pocket watching, who needs to step up tonight? The 530, they have something to say. We need Barnes to play one of his all-star candidate games instead of being invisible to make up for Malik being gone. Crazy, his whole career, he can go from looking like the best player on the court to completely invisible. Let me.
I missed that first part.
Let me put it to you like this: we have a ways to go in this season. We don't think
not much.
The whole thing, I believe, we have a ways to go. If Harrison Barnes turns the bleeping Jets on starting tonight, can he make up for the last couple years where he's just been hammered time in and time out? Even just a couple games ago, putting up a donut, putting up 2 points, things like that. Can he be forgiven for his sins if he balls out these next couple games starting tonight?
I love that you asked this question. I love that you asked this question. I feel like you know what I'm already going to say.
No, I don't. I don't.
No, I mean, I just think that if anything, it creates more frustration. Like, I mean, every time a player, you know, has these inconsistencies where they're in and out, when you have big performances, it's like, well, where has this been? We've needed this guy all season long. And sure, you could say, you know, never, or better late than never. I was about to do a Drake verse. I wasn't even trying to. You know, and I think that ultimately it'll lead to more frustration. I mean, absolutely, we'll take it. Beggars cannot be choosers. But, you know, I think it would just lead to more frustration of, okay, well, where was this against OKC? When we, you know, and I know he had 10 free throws the other day.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like if that were to happen, because of the situation, it would just be, hey, let's just, if you get into a big fight with a family member or a significant other and it goes on for a while and you just get to a point, hey, let's just move forward. Maybe it would be some of that.
You wait for the other shoe to drop. Yeah. The second he has two good games, it's like, okay, well, how much longer can we continue to bank on this? And then it becomes it would just shine a brighter light on the inconsistency, because the second the bad thing happens, it's then, oh, well, that was fun. Just like what happened in the regular season. Yeah. He had three really good games in a row, and then it was just kind of back to what we had seen for the entirety of the season. I'm not saying I wouldn't welcome it. It would be great. The Kings need somebody else to step up right now, 100%. And if it's Harrison Barnes, makes a lot of sense, and it definitely usually leads to, when HB plays well, the Kings tend to play well as well. So, you know, it would be great for this team if it happens, but I'm just letting you know, if it happens, I'm going to be upset that this hadn't been here all season long. And
hold on.
I would not believe in it. Like, there would, it would take because, you know, we even saw, who was it, Caleb or Cody Martin last year in the Eastern Conference Finals have himself a crazy series. Who knows? Like, maybe it works for HB matchup-wise for an entire series, but I wouldn't believe that it's just something we can bank on moving forward, because just like we've seen from this Kings team all year, yeah, you can be good for a little, but we just know that that other thing is coming real soon.
No. And I'm not thinking, oh, wow, HB is going to take the Kings to the Western Conference Finals.
Sure.
I'm just saying he cooks for three games. Maybe you get lucky and sneak into the sixth seed, or you get the seven and you get into the playoffs. You lose in the first round. He goes back to human, lose in the first round. A lot of people don't believe or aren't sure that he will be in Sacramento this coming season. You say, hey, it was up and down, but at least he got hot towards the end of the year. He helped get us into the playoffs.
Thank you for your service.
It might just lessen the annoyance a little bit.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think, you know, not to get ahead of ourselves, but like, yeah, I think that HB will, whenever it's all said and done, he will be appreciated for his time here. Like, he definitely had a lot of good moments. But yeah, I think no matter what happens, like I said, I'll take three games from HB getting us into a better situation. And if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. Again, beggars cannot be choosers, not Chipotle. We can't get to pick and choose which guy. I want Keon Ellis to be the reason why these guys make the play-in. Like, you know, you just can't have it that way. So if the Kings get to the play-in and HB's a big reason for it, absolutely. Huge shout-out to HB. And I would also say, like, that is what you're supposed to do. Like, that is living up to the guy that you're supposed to be. And I know he's capable of doing it. But that's again, just to tie it back, that's what makes it so frustrating is I know he's able to do it. I know he's capable of doing it. And it would be at a perfect time right now. The most veteran guy on this team for him to step up in these last three games. I mean, I feel like I sound like a broken record. This is the story of HB with this team. He is the guy who you should point to as we need someone to step up. It should be this most veteran guy who's been on championship teams, who's been through the ringer, who's been with this team in this situation longer than anybody else besides De'Aaron Fox. He understands what's going on. You would like him to step up and take a little bit of ownership over what's going on as this team is barely hanging on for their lives right now.
If they don't get it done, it is officially done with the sixth seed.
Yeah.
Okay, so
officially. Stamp it down.
Even 100%. Chris Watkins can't convince us during the post game or anywhere else. It will officially, mathematically be finito if the Kings lose tonight.
Santiago.
The best that they can do is the seventh seed. Now, even if they win, you still need help from other places,
all
but mathematically, they're done. Yep. And here is the slate for today. Warriors, well, the slate that matters for the Kings. Two games, really. Warriors at Blazers and Pelicans at Kings. The Warriors have a pretty soft schedule.
Super soft. Funny how that happens.
Everybody
else plays division opponents the last stretch of the season.
Yeah.
Not the Warriors. They play the Blazers, Pelicans, and Jazz.
Well, they got the Pelicans.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they sure do.
They got the Pelicans.
Yeah, I mean, they ended the season with Jazz, Lakers, Blazers, Pelicans, Jazz.
One more time?
Jazz, Lakers, Blazers, Pelicans, Jazz are their last five games of the season. And that Laker game had no LeBron, no AD. No AD.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Yeah. Well, Warriors at Trailblazers, Pelicans at Kings. If the Kings lose, the sixth seed is officially cooked. If they win, they still have a shot. And more importantly, it keeps them closer to that seven seed to get a home. Are we on, you know, this was a thing a couple months ago, and it's kind of gone away because the Kings have lost in both places, at home and on the road. Is anybody on the bandwagon, 916-339-1140, is anyone on the bandwagon that they'd rather the Kings play on the road? We were seeing that earlier this season when the Kings were playing better on the road and having issues at home. But at this point, if I'm choosing, I'm choosing home.
I'm always choosing home. I don't care if the Kings are one in whatever at home throughout the season. It is better to have those games at home. I don't care, you know, and people will say, you know, they'll do Captain Hindsight, or they'll be big brain and say, oh, but maybe there's too much pressure at home. Yeah. Like, I feel like they tighten it. No, like every single team in any sport should not be afraid of playing in your home court. There should be no excuse like that. You should always, 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 always want to play at home, never on the road. I get it. And saying that, I understand why. I've seen every game from this team for at the very least the last 2 years. I understand why people feel that way. But no, I mean, ultimately, you know, you want the biggest games of the season to be at home, to be in your control as much as possible, because you think that it's too much pressure to play at home. Just imagine how stressful or how much pressure you feel when it's a serious gotta have it game and you're playing the Warriors at Chase Center. No. Steph hits a three to put him up eight. There's a timeout called and that crowd's going crazy.
Steph is doing backflips during emotions. Timeouts.
Yeah, like, no. You know, that's much worse.
I'll put it to you like this. With this current team, without Malik, and I know Dave said some things. We'll get into the Malik Monk conversation and could he come back earlier than expected. We will talk about that later in the show. I would say maybe with Malik Monk, who is a dog and feeds off it.
Yeah, provides maybe, energy.
Maybe that iteration of that team, I'd have the conversation. With De'Aaron Sabonis and a bunch of role players play better at home.
Corny enough, they need the sixth man. Like, they need the crowd. They need that energy. Like, if the Kings lose a 19-point lead at home, they're going to hear it. Like, and I don't necessarily think that that's going to change the outcome, but it's going to give energy, and you know, you can use that energy however you want. You can, you know, use it as fuel.
Wait. You're saying that people would boo?
No, I mean, they might have, but I more just
not during
think,
a
like,
play-in.
Probably not during a play-in, but I'm more just saying, like, as it's spiraling, you might get, hey, you know, maybe instead of booing in a time where during the regular season they might boo, maybe the crowd recognizes they could use a little uplifting.
Moke will hop in
100%,
and hey,
100%.
You know, let's turn this thing back up. Turn this thing back up. And that's just not going to happen on the road. And we've seen this Kings team on the road. The issue isn't making shots early, it's making shots late. And it would help as far as what I think it would help to be at home because of the importance of the role players with Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter out. Coming up next, the top 30 players right now. Where do Fox and Sabonis fall? And what does that say about the Kings roster construction? Styles and Watkins, Sackdown Sport. You have the Ringer's updated top 30 players. And Chris, you've seen this already?
Yes. Yeah, I saw this. It's on it's on theringer.com.
Yeah, and
made me a little upset.
Why? Too low? Too high?
Well, De'Aaron and Domas both fell from the previous ranking, which I don't understand how Domantas Sabonis gets 61 consecutive double-doubles and yet falls in some rankings. And just doesn't quite make sense to me. He fell from 22 to 24.
And De'Aaron was at 18?
De'Aaron was at 20. 19 and moved to 22.
And now, De'Aaron Fox at 22, Domantas Sabonis at 24. And a lot of people will say, myself included, well, who cares about this list at this point in the season? But I do think it is interesting to compare the level of star you have to the roster that you have to what you are thought to have accomplished or should accomplish with said roster. So some of the names ahead of these guys: Jokic, Doncic, Giannis, Shea, Embiid, Kawhi, Tatum, Steph, Durant, Davis, Booker, James, Brunson, Edwards, Butler, Wembanyama, Halliburton at 17, Jamal Murray, Donovan Mitchell, Zion Williamson, and Paul George. So if you look at where these guys are, I think the craziest thing to me is how bad the Lakers are and how bad, I guess to a lesser degree, the Suns. There are not many teams on here with two dudes in the top 20. You have the Lakers with Anthony Davis and LeBron James, and then you have the Suns with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, and I'm pretty sure that's it.
Yeah, with two in the top 20,
With two in the top 20.
Yep.
So to me, that's embarrassing. If you are a Suns fan Or a Lakers fan.
Paul George is 21, yeah.
You could argue Paul, but at least they're the four seed.
Yeah, no.
Right?
Yeah.
Before, and by the way, Mavs Clippers is locked and loaded, so that is going to be a great series. But I look at this, Chris, and, you know, we're very honest on this show about the roster construction, things like that. You see two guys outside the top 20 in De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis, and even when they had Malik Monk and even when they had Kevin Huerter, I look at this and it tells me, when you look at other guys that are higher up, right? It's almost like the higher up you are, the better your cast needs to be, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. I also see Jamal Murray's in the top 20.
So
well.
Jamal Murray and Jokic. And that's kind of surprising for Jamal Murray.
Yeah, that's why I was like, I don't know if Jamal Murray is better than De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
Sabonis, but okay.
You get that championship, people look at you differently. Yeah.
Don't get me started at number 17.
And the guys that don't have another dude, right? So the Lucas, and by the way, there was a conversation about Kyrie versus Brunson. I think we've had it before. But Luka not having anybody else. Giannis not having anybody else, even though Dame is 26. Shea not having anybody else. Embiid not having anybody else. It really speaks to how important the rest of the cast is, because if you look at Shea at 4, he's high up, but the rest of his cast is on an upwards trajectory. And the other guys that are really high up, let's say Jason Tatum 7, look at the team put around him. So as much as we talk about whether or not De'Aaron Fox can be one of the dudes and really Sabonis as well, it really matters who else you have around these guys. Because you can have a top player like Luka and still, I mean, yeah, they found a way to get to the 5 seed, but still for majority of the season be fighting for a play-in.
Yeah.
That's just where we're at right now, and it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really, really tough. And, I mean, you look at the best teams in the league, and it's no coincidence, and it kind of goes hand in hand, but like Denver has 1, 2, 3, 4, all 5 of their starters in the top 100 of this list. Mm-hmm. OKC has 3 guys in the top 50 of this list. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about, the other guys building it up, the Kings have 2 guys in the top 100 of this list. And now you could argue, like, how is Malik Monk not at least in the,
right,
you know, low 90s, high 80s? I would definitely make that argument, but ultimately, he's not here. Like, he's not playing with this team right now.
Wouldn't matter.
To your point about the roster construction, like, the Kings, that's where they're at right now, is they have these two guys. They're both, you know, according to this list, I would argue they should be higher. I would honestly probably argue Sabonis should be higher than Fox, but whatever. 2 top 25 guys in the league. That's where, you know, that's why the development of Keegan Murray was so essential. That's why, you know, I mean, Malik definitely did his part in taking that step up this year, but he is so essential to this team playing. Kevin Herter's probably supposed to be close to 100 on this list, if I had to guess.
Last season, weren't you saying last season they had 4 guys on this list?
They might have.
It was at least 3.
Yeah, I don't know if they have a time capsule in this article.
I'm pretty sure Kevin Huerter was on the list.
They had a couple, and usually HB's like the default guy that at the start of the year, like, teams will just throw in there because they don't actually watch the games. But like, I think that's really telling, is the fact that the Kings just don't have that third guy that's even on, like, on the, I mean, Keegan's definitely that guy, but not to be recognized in the top 100 or clearly as a top 100 guy. I think that's where this team needs to improve, and it can still be the internal development of Keegan, but ultimately, when you look at the teams that they're competing against, a lot of, even the Lakers, are, you know, granted they are the Lakers, but they have 4 guys on this list. Austin Reaves is 77, D'Lo's 83. I would probably argue that that's a bit of Laker bias, but I think that's, you know, even the Warriors, like Draymond and Klay, those guys are always going to be in the top 100, and even now, they're not at the top of their game. I'm sure they're still in the top 100 of this list. I think it really is a sign that the Kings just kind of didn't have the depth and talent that I think they thought they had. And actually, the Warriors have 3. Klay's not even on the top 100. Kuminga.
Wow.
Kuminga is number 81.
Your
on this
guy.
List. How is Kuminga 81 on this list and Malik Monk is not featured? Someone make that make
Warrior
sense.
Warrior bias. You know,
insane.
You know what it is.
That's insane.
Speaking of bias, when you talk about a guy who may have improved versus having a hot season, what do you think about D'Lo, D'Angelo Russell's value. Because it feels, I know a sucker is born every day, but it feels like you should want D'Lo to continue to ball out. The season's almost over. He's what? You said 80-something, 70-something on this list?
83 on this
Malik list. Monk isn't on the list, but I have no clue if other teams, we keep on throwing out the Orlando Magic, if you need a scoring guard, go get D'Lo. But I don't know if teams actually, D'Lo's in this weird spot where he could ball out and it doesn't feel like anybody cares because it just feels like he had a good season, but we know what he
is. You know what he is.
But as Kings fans, you can hope that somebody is going to say, all right, I think D'Lo might be one of our guys and prioritize D'Lo over Malik Monk. Maybe that happens.
No, absolutely. I mean, D'Lo's 28 years old. You could convince yourself that he's turned a corner or something, you know, in the same way that Malik has. Malik has definitely turned a corner here in Sacramento. D'Lo's a little bit older than he is, but absolutely, that's 100% the hope, is that somebody convinces themselves that D'Lo's the guy and that lowers the market for Malik. And I think the same thing is true of Clay as well. If Clay gets a big bag from Orlando, or at least gets thrown that offer, I think that's good for Malik or better for the Kings, because, you know, the more people that are focused on getting guys who aren't Malik Monk, I definitely think that's going to be better for the Kings. I think Malik is definitely going to prioritize being the priority of somebody's free agent list. And there's no doubt about it. He's going to be number one for the Kings. I don't know. I mean, that's a good point. Especially if the Lakers do make the playoffs somehow, hopefully that's not at the Kings'
expense. Go off, D'Lo.
Yeah, I mean, if it ends up leading to Malik not getting the bag and D'Lo getting it, you know, that might be a nice consolation prize.
Coming up next, we have an update on the developing story with Shohei Ohtani and the betting situation. Also, what has his former translator admitted to, and what are the next steps? And we have some numbers on De'Aaron Fox needing to drive more. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.